Hey, I'm Dr. Z, and I'm a neurosurgeon. So that means long hours, early rounds, late nights, and everything in between. And through it all, I wear FIGS because they're built for what I do. Through the chaos, through the hours, and through whatever the day throws at me, they do their job so I can do mine. They're comfortable when it counts and functional when I need them the most. So where do you wear your FIGS? On shift, on call, on the couch in the break room, listening to this podcast, wherever it is, they fit right in. And now listeners of this podcast can get 15% off their first order. Just head to wearfigs.com and use code FIGSRX at checkout. That's wearfigs.com, code FIGSRX.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery. So you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favor to ask. And that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends. And don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast. A podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy.
Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is Danny Pilgrim. Well, afternoon, Danny. How's it going, man?
How you doing? You all right?
Very well, thank you. And yourself?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. I'm good.
But then, just before we dive into the real heart of the discussion, maybe just a brief insight around who you are, what you do, and we'll go from there, man.
Yeah, great. So like you've already said, so my name's Danny Pilgrim. I've been involved in football, obviously playing for a long period in my life, from sort of like obviously a boy to an adult now. Started a coaching journey probably about 13 years ago. Currently coach now at Birmingham City within the youth development phase, and I'm also involved within the non-league football as well as a first team coach.
Amazing. Danny, I guess I've done really well to capture what's probably an extended period of time in a few seconds. Just talk to us a little bit around, you know, the journey into football in particular, and, you know, when you first embarked on the world of coaching.
Yeah, so obviously as a young boy, you know, you play football and in your grassroots football, and you look to, obviously, everyone wants to be a footballer, don't they? And I was definitely one of those people that wanted to be. Unfortunately, didn't make the cut. I played at a decent level, semi-professional level, played in Germany as well, represented the army when I was in the military. Had various different trials for different clubs when I was in the military as well, but obviously was some successful. And then just cut it in non-league really until I couldn't carry on playing any longer, which was about 30 years really when I got into my 30s through injury. And then from there, really, I had no aspirations whatsoever really to be a coach. It's quite weird, really. I just remember having a conversation with someone really close to me that had some boys within an academy. And he mentioned around me getting involved in coaches. And I was just like, at the time, I just felt like I never had the patience to be able to be a coach. So at that time, it was no. And then eventually when I stopped playing, I got invited by a close friend of mine who was managing at the time, just to come in and be as an assistant manager at the time and just do some coaching. Obviously, I couldn't play any longer, so I thought, I'll just keep my hand in football. And that's how it started, really, from there. And the journey kicks on, really, from there, really. But, yeah, it was in non-league football that I started my very first coaching job.
Awesome. Just you know, to touch on a couple of things that I want to kind of unpack, really. You know, one of the things you started off by saying is, unfortunately, you didn't quite make the cut. I think we can all, or many of us can probably relate to that. But then you touched on, you know, being able to play at a decent level and having experiences in, you know, semi-professional and obviously Germany as well. I'm really keen to kind of get your views on this, because it's a hot topic at the moment, and around the importance of coaches having played the game at some level, not necessarily in a professional capacity, but just having experience playing the game. Because I think one of the things that you're seeing often now is, and I'm probably sure you'd agree with this, that generation of coaches coming through now seems to be getting younger and younger, at least more intentional ones around the ones that are trying to maybe break into the elite game or the pro game, if you like. Those coaches in particular are getting younger and younger, at least for my observation as well. But there is often that concern in some people's eyes, or a consideration in others, actually just how important it is to maybe have played the game or have experience playing the game at some level.
Yeah, I think for me, it's more importantly just to have a really good knowledge of the game, more so than you played. Because as you can see, obviously now you'll have some coaches that haven't really played at a level or anything like that, but they're excellent communicators, they're excellent people person, and they study and know the game. The game's obviously evolved massively since I was playing the game. So there's lots of different roles within football that lots of people can obviously partake in and have an input in a player's journey or team's journey or plan, through various roles, but they haven't played the football at a great level, but they know the game inside and out. And I think long as you've got knowledge of the game and you can articulate that in the right way to the boys, and more importantly, they know that you've got a really interest in them as a person first, you're going to get a buy-in straight away. So yes, of course, being able to have played the game at a really good level or of some level is probably going to get you a quicker buy-in on a quick instant thing. But you could have played the game, but you can't articulate it. So I think it doesn't, as the game's evolving, it doesn't really matter as much now. And in my opinion, that's the way it should be, because some of the best coaches I've played with haven't really played at a great level either. I don't see it being a problem. I only see it probably getting better as more coaches get involved and younger they are. Obviously, their playing days probably get more focused on coaching, because that's an expertise. It's an expertise at the end of the day, coaching, isn't it? So your expertise might not be playing the game, it might be just coaching the game or analysing the game.
Do you think, linked to that, where do you stand on the debate around qualifications versus experience then?
Yeah, so this I'll take this back from when I first started, really. That was one of the main things that put me off. It was a case of, and I'll be really honest, I was like, I don't want to go and do all those courses. You know, it's not for me. I thought I knew more than what I did. I was like, it's just too much hassle. I know the game, I played the game. It's, how hard is it to coach? But I got humbled by it. I ain't gonna lie, I got humbled by it. And I went into that first role, and it was a case of, well, actually, it's not as simplistic of just turning up and putting a session on, and it's a lot more detail to that. And that what made me want to go into it even more. I wanted to hang on a minute, I'm having a go at this. I actually want to be good at this. I want them to respect what I'm saying and understand what I'm saying. So that first role for me as an unqualified coach going into non-league, I was like, no, I need to come out of this. And then I come out of it and I went into junior football and started my badges to actually learn how to, one, articulate, to talk to people, to the coaching detail around it, not just putting 11 players out on the pitch. Just really, really understanding what it is, what it involves, to be what you need to be a coach. So in terms of qualifications and experience, yes, you can have all the experience in the world. Again, I'll go back to the same point, I suppose, around younger coaches and not playing the game. You can have all the experience in the world of playing at the top level, but you might not be able to articulate that on the grass to the boys to be able to develop them. or get them to play for you, whatever level that might be. So yeah, and that's that. I suppose that goes cap in hand with the badges. You can have all the badges in the world and maybe have passed them, but actually it doesn't mean that you're necessarily a great coach either. If you've got the two, great. If you haven't, then you've got to go and get the experience with the qualifications, and really put yourself in tricky situations, uncomfortable situations, to be able to navigate that experience, be better. That's probably my view on qualifications, but I had to learn the hard way myself. So
yeah,
I got humbled by that, and I'd recommend anyone that actually wants to go into coaching to take the badge seriously from the very first one to the very last one that they do, because there's always something in there that you're going to take away.
So it's interesting because you've gone in there with a mindset of already kind of knowing, well, believing you knew what you knew, and maybe not knowing what you didn't know necessarily. And I think that's the beauty of I guess this journey of coaching that we go through. Like, the more we apply ourselves, the more we realize we ain't got a clue what we're doing.
Right? Yeah, definitely.
So
still
I guess
feel like that now sometimes.
But I think it's a good place to be, to be honest, man.
Yeah.
Because if you look at it through that lens, and I guess you're constantly searching for more answers, right, more solutions to the problems that you're facing, and the same problem is perceived very differently in different environments. So I think there's a beauty in having that openness to accepting I ain't got a clue what I'm doing, and sometimes having the vulnerability to even be vocal with that as well. And I guess linked to that, then what was your perception of coaching when you first came into it, and how has that shifted now? Because I think back about my own journey when I first started, very much the coach says you do kind of approach. Times have changed, society's changed, the world has changed, and I guess we've had to change with that, right? And then maybe talk to that a little bit around what your experiences were and what your perception on what coaching was when you first came into it, and maybe some pivotal moments that you think have really shifted your mindset around that, and what it looks like for you today.
Yeah, I definitely agree with what you just said there. That's probably the first thing that was springing out to my mind when you first asked that question. It was very much as do as I say, and it was if you didn't, you was out the session, or you didn't play the game. It was very much the coach was the messiah of everything, and that's it. There was no other bendy or what about this, what about that, and. It was just a case of the coach said how that team was going to play today, and you had to play that way, otherwise you didn't play. It was very much as simple as that. I suppose that was like that for me right up until I really started coaching as well, really. So, and I went into coaching with that mindset as well. My very first job was in that mindset of, I know what I'm doing, you just follow me. But actually, as the games evolved, it kind of overtook me, really, in terms of...
Would you say that was shaped by your own experiences as a player then, in terms of what coach you looked like, how you became a coach in the first instance, or how you enacted a coach's role in the first instance, was based on your experiences of what you received as coaching, if you like?
Yeah. And I suppose what I liked, me as a person, as my biases in terms of how I am, as how I played the game, was probably how I was going to go and expect everybody else to play it. So me being a combative midfielder and just didn't really care. It was like, I'm going to win at all costs. I don't care how I'm going to do it. I expected everybody else to play and train like that. So that's probably the reason why I didn't want to start coaching, because I probably didn't feel like I had the patience or be able to articulate the ideas that I wanted to get across because of how I played the game. So that's a big thing, really. I think it, how you are in terms of your own biases is a big factor in terms of when you go into how you go into coaching. So I went into that with that bias mindset of, nah, it's got to be this way. Well, actually, to develop players first and foremost, but to develop a team that when I first started was obviously all about winning, but you still had to develop the player and get the player to understand where you wanted to go, where the journey wanted to be, what you wanted to be. You had to adapt, and I was struggling to adapt. I was like, why is this not working? Because everyone used to listen to me on the pitch, but then, as in my team, but it's completely different. So
what was the moment for you that, I guess, it had the mirror held up in front of you, that you realised, okay, something needs to change, and it's not the players, it's me.
It's the blank faces. It was the blank faces. It was like, what is he talking about? what's going on, that sort of thing. And it was like that realization, well, actually, you need to be better at this. If you want to take it seriously, you need to be better at it. Like I said, I got humbled by it, and I'm not afraid to say that. I keep getting humbled, which is good for me. I think if you keep getting humbled at some point, then you're going down the right path, really, I think.
So I guess within that process, then, did you have someone to support you with that in terms of a reflection process, or I guess holding up that mirror for you? Because I think one of the challenges that you often have, right, especially maybe before you step into, let's say, the elite world of coaching, or the pro gaming, whether that be academies or first team, whatever that might be, it's in many cases you're probably coaching alone. So very, very rarely do you actually have someone alongside you that's going to be able to give you that, you know, that real challenging feedback. Or in other cases, you know, if you are the head honcho, if you like, in that environment, that also brings its own challenges in with other people not wanting to actually give you feedback or challenge you. Or in other cases, it might just be, right, well, he's the head coach, he knows what he's doing, so I'm just going to follow what he does. You know, so what was that like for you? Because I think that's a real tricky place to be in.
Yeah, it is a tricky one, especially if you've not got anyone working with you and someone trusted alongside you. I would say I was really, really fortunate, really, in terms of that. And so I had a lot of good friends that had just started their journey as well, crossing over the path from playing to coaching. And I've got a really good friend now who's kind of followed my journey, really. We've kind of done everything in terms of, if I've done a course, he eventually does it. He does a course, I do a course. We go to a different job, he comes to the job, that sort of thing. So, and he's really good at checking and challenging me, really. But not in a way to say that I'm wrong in terms of things that I might be trying to get out. You just pose a different question in a different way to make me think differently. And I remember it was just putting a session on, and he like the blank faces, the ideas weren't coming out, and we reviewed it, if you want to call it that. At the time, I didn't know I was reviewing it, but we reviewed it after, and it was a case of, well, how you said this, do you really think he's going to want to do that? And it was just those little questions, those little things that really made me go away and reflect and go, hang on a minute, you know, let's go and learn how to be a coach, if you, because I liked it. I, when I started it, I was like, oh, actually, this is good. I like doing this. But then you get off, like I said, and you got checked and challenged, which is really good. So yeah, it's really difficult, I think, that one. But it's surrounding you. I think if you surround yourself by the right people, and you're open minded to take the feedback, that's the big one. You've got to take the feedback, as much as it might sting sometimes in terms of what someone might say. You've got to take it, and then go away and reflect on it. And I think that's what I did. That's what I was able to do.
100%, and I spot on. I think you're completely right. But you know, it's something that you mentioned. You said you were quite fortunate to have that individual around you from the get go, right? So I guess, you know, reflecting back now, you know, if you didn't have that individual, how would you know what the individual, or how would you know how to find an individual like that? Because, you know, I think that's one of the challenges for younger coaches, right? In that, as an example, you know, if there's a coach that just starts out today, he knows that Danny Pilgrim's been working in the game for 13 years doing coaching. It's very easy to fall into trap. Well, I'll just tag along with Danny. Dan knows what he's doing. He's been doing it for 13 years.
Yeah.
But you and I could probably appreciate that's probably not as straightforward as that, because you might be doing 13 years of it, but you might not be that great at it. Right?
Yeah.
So what would you be looking for as a young coach if you have to start the journey over again, in terms of what that individual, where that experience or what experiences might be beneficial to go and seek and, I guess, learn from, if you like?
I think the ones that you tend to gravitate to, or I tend to gravitate to, are the ones that are really humble in terms of what they're saying. You know, if they're going to turn around and say that they've got everything right in their path, their journey, then we all know that's probably going to be incorrect. It's the ones that are going to really good at communicating. It's not just communicating about the X's and the O's. It's about communicating with the person, you know, the individual that they're coaching. If they're taking a real care to get to know the boy or the person, you know, obviously everyone's got their own way. It might not necessarily be, oh, what did you get up to today? And, oh, how was school? Or how's work? it's a conversation, kind of like we're having now. It's a conversation. How does that person interact with people? How do they seek to find that coach out as well? Do they seek that person or those players? Do they come and say hi to that coach? Do they come and not just talk about footballers, like, oh, how did you get on and stuff like that? Those are the ones that I keep my eyes out for now when I'm looking at, like, the next level of coaching and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, you know, I like the way he's done things there. I like the way, see how that player is always going to him and going, oh, did you see what I just did there? And that coach is then reaffirming, obviously, what they've obviously just been working on. So little things like that, I think they're not necessarily, it's not also necessarily about communications. I'll give an example. My boy is 8 years old and he's playing grassroots at the moment. And there's a coach there that he works with, my boy works with, and he's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant because of how he talks to the kids, but the details there, but it's how he articulating to the kids. And I've said to my wife a couple of times, I said, I'm stealing ideas from him. I'm stealing how he's speaking to these kids, but not only how he's speaking to them, his actual session design, I'm just going to go, okay, well, I might be working with older boys. I'm going to tweak that to make it fit. So it's always how the person communicates and articulates with people and the players that they're working with. I think that's a big one for me. Definitely.
I think something in what you said there, and it just got me thinking that, you know, even in my current role, I work as a coach developer across different awards. And one of the things I always say to the coaches, look, the beauty of working with coaches that are maybe quote unquote less experienced or newer to the industry, is that they've got some fascinating ideas. They probably just don't quite have the experiences yet or the knowledge yet just to piece those ideas together to bring them alive. Whereas being on the other end of that equation, where you've got a bit more experience, a bit more understanding, you can actually see where to connect the dots with their own ideas. But linked to what you're saying, I mean, I don't even look at stealing. It's very rare that we're going to do something now in the game for as long as it's been going on, as long as coaching's been a profession or a vocation more than anything, that we're probably going to do something that's never been seen before. It's probably all been done. We're not necessarily reinventing the wheel, but it's just making it fit for the environment that we're working with and the players that we're working with at the same time. So I guess, you talked there about some of the observational experiences that you've had there in terms of that, you know, where you can draw context and where you can draw insight and knowledge from. But, you know, let's take it back to your perception of coaching. So obviously, you know, you had that way of thinking. You said you were humbled and proudly would love to continue to be humbled, which I think is brilliant. How has that shifted for you over the years? Because, you know, 13 years into the journey, probably working at different levels, different experiences with different players of different age groups and whatnot. You know, what does coaching look like for Danny Pilgrim today?
Yeah, very much different to the way it started. So I'm now a lot more open-minded in terms of not just from fellow coaches, but from the players. There's some good, really intelligent players that I work with that will come up with a little bit of an idea within the session, and not being too afraid to go, oh, actually, that's a good idea. I'll try that in a second and maybe adapt the session or something. But letting the player know that's a good idea as well, because straight away I've got his buy-in. He's going to try extra hard for me. So it's just, I'm probably a lot more open-minded in relation to that. I was very much command style when I started. So obviously that's very different to how I coach now. And that might still come in. It's really important that command stays in, because there is a place for it, and not to be afraid of that.
I think there is a perception now that command is sometimes viewed as a bad or negative thing, but I actually think it's got a very, very, very valuable place in coaching.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think it's because there's all different learning styles as well, isn't there? So for me as a player growing up, I was very much, I liked that because that's probably the only thing that I knew at the time. But there's going to be players out there that would prefer that they'd like that sort of command style, as well as obviously more players that might be a Q&A type player, trial and error, that sort of stuff. And it's just trying to make sure that I understand every individual that I'm working with. So that's what I try to go out and achieve as best as I possibly can. Obviously, there's going to be times where I might miss things, but that's the first and foremost, is who's the person, what are they like, how can I help them, what are their motivations, what are their individual needs, and how do they like the game? What do they want from the game? Understanding that, a lot, linking back to the motivations, I suppose. So yeah, it's a lot more open-minded, a lot more vocal in terms of, I suppose, more confidence in terms of my detail when I'm coaching. So I feel like I'm a lot more confident compared to when I first started out. I kind of feel like I was guessing things, as when now I've got a lot more detail and I can back it up a little bit more with the stuff that I'm saying. So yeah, I'll probably say them sort of things, really.
Pick on that a little bit then, you know, you used the word a couple of times and I'm sure I have an appreciation for what you mean when you talk about it, but for those folks that aren't, maybe just expand, you know, what are we talking about when we're thinking about detail? Because I think it is a word that gets branded around in coaching. And I guess some coaches may be listening to that and thinking, okay, what are we actually talking about? What are we looking at here? We get the idea that we want to be more detailed in our coaching, but what does that actually look like? And what would you say to that?
Yeah, so the biggest one that springs to my mind is, I suppose, the big thing that's out there at the moment is around scanning. It's a simple thing as scan. And players, as coaches, say, make sure you scan. I suppose then it's the detail is, how do you scan? When do you scan? Timing of your scan? What are you looking for? Those sort of things, really. And breaking it down for the player. So understand what they're seeing when they scan. So it's those little conversations it's not in the middle of the session either. It could be a conversation as you walk into the session. Those little things, I think that's where you can go into really minute detail with players, instead of just going, right, it's all about the session and the X's and O's and the player's got to go here and there. It's the detail with the player in terms of that individual. What are you trying to get out of that individual today? Is that session around that individual? Okay, well, if it's finishing, okay, well, let's look at his timing. Okay, so at what moment are you looking to make that move? How are you looking to create that little bit of space? And how do you do it? So, okay, so it might be that little going away, okay, to show. Might be a little shove to create that little bit of extra distance. It might just be staying out of the blind spot. All different things, and it's just that's the detail I think that we need to go into. But it's not in the middle of the session. It's not as the ball's rolling, if you want to call it that. It's those little spare little moments that you have with the players where you might be having a water break. And you just go, oh, just come here, let's have a little chat about that. And, you know, just before you was asked for the ball there, you had a little look over your shoulder. Yeah, and then when you look back, the ball had gone. And it was to your left-hand side. Oh, yeah, do you remember that? But I did look, yeah. Okay, well, you looked, but was the timing of when you looked, was it right? He was about to kick the football. So think about when you're going to turn away from the ball. So it's that extra little detail. And then simple things around the pass and the safe side, that sort of stuff.
But that stuff takes time, right? I mean, I completely agree with you. I think all these things are really relevant. Yeah, but I guess the younger coaches or newer coaches, that stuff takes time to even observe and identify. That's even a thing. I mean, I just remember an experience of mine, come back to 10 years ago now. And I used to work with a mate of mine, and he'd been coaching for about 10 years longer, happened to be about 10 years older as well. And I used to get frustrated because he used to see things a lot quicker than me.
Mm.
It's just like, it's only after a little bit of a time and, you know, just banging my head against a brick wall for a little bit, I think I just had to accept, he's been doing it for longer.
Mm.
He's been doing it for longer, therefore he's got more insight and probably has better understanding of not the idea of being able to observe, but actually knowing what to observe for.
Yeah.
So, you know, you start to see the patterns quickly. And then I think, you know, as we go through the coaching journeys ourselves, and, you know, I'm sure you've been there as well when you're working, like, you start to see things a lot quicker in terms of, okay, cool, I can see what's happening there. Your mind already goes to solutions. And I think at times, you know, it can be challenging because you don't want to assume anything based on what you've observed. But so, which I think is brilliant in terms of what you talked about in terms of getting the player's perception of things as well, which I think is a challenge for coaches.
It's definitely that one saying, isn't it? It's the before, during, and after, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's that. Can you see what's happening before it happens, and then the during, the action, and then it's the after. Okay, so it's that. I think why I try 100%. To look at it as well.
No, it's definitely a great framework for just coaches just to start with. You know, what's happening, like I said, before, during, and after the action itself. and then kind of coupling that with the next action and so on and so forth. So, you know, I think really useful stuff. I think we said, you know, just kind of develop it further then on that, then, you know, where does a coach begin to start with what might be a key consideration within that? So I'll give you an example. You know, you've probably worked with coaches who are more senior than you, more experienced. You see, you probably picked up stuff off them. If you're a coach listening to this now, thinking, okay, well, where can I start developing my observation skills or even noticing things more effectively? What would your advice to those coaches be?
Oh, that's a tough question. I suppose just taking time to think about what you're going to say before you say it. So it's just having that pause moment, I think, and understanding, going it through your head. There's nothing wrong with it going through your head before. So say if you wanted to stop a session, for example, and you wanted to speak to the whole group, if you need to, it's okay, just stop one set. And it's just having that pause and understanding what you're going to say and how you're going to say it and how you're going to articulate it. That helps, instead of going, okay, session, start, need to speak to everyone, and straight into it. That little pause and that little time for everybody else to just reflect a second themselves and understand where they are in that pitch geography that they might be standing in. That will help, I think, for young coaches, because I think I'm looking, reflecting back for myself, I was very much, I seen it, I need to correct it. Sometimes you don't need to correct it. Or I seen it, I need to say it, I need to tell them. Or do you need to tell them right there and then? So I think that those things really, and being a little bit more, trying not to coach too much of the session, try to coach more of the actions in the individual. So you're not coaching the session in terms of, like, you've got to move from here to there. If you're doing that, you're probably session design's wrong. If you're having to show people after 5 or 10 minutes where they need to go, where they need to move, etc., you're probably in the wrong session design. It's as quickly as you possibly can get the ball rolling and getting in, and then you're observing the actions of what you really want to coach.
Yeah, I think it's spot on, because, you know, one of the things I talk about coaches all the time is, and they ask me, you know, how many practices do you use, and what type. I said, to be honest with you, I probably only use about 6 or 7 different types of sessions.
Yeah.
6 or 7 different types of sessions. They're basic templates. They're simple to understand, and they do what it says on the tip. It allows me to coach what I want to coach. And as long as that's right, I don't even mind if the players don't perform it to the T, as long as it still allows me to do what I need to do with it. So there'll be times where I'll explain it, and then maybe players have to interpret it slightly different, and that's fine. For as long as I can still get my focus out and work on the things I've intended to work on, I'll just run with it. Whereas I think especially as a newer coach, when you first come into it, there is this kind of pressure that comes with it. I don't know whether it's a pressure that we put on ourselves as coaches when we start, or whether it's just pressure of just being in the space, but we feel the need to actually just constantly come up with new things. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I try to give the analogy to simple. I use a lot of analogies in the way that I coach, and even my coach development work. It's like, if I was to ask you right now, Danny, what's your favorite dish? What would you say?
My favorite what? Sorry.
Favorite dish.
Dish food.
Yeah.
Here we go.
All right, cool. Who makes it the best for you?
My sister.
Yeah, brilliant. Now, if she changes one thing in that recipe, it doesn't taste the same anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you just keep repeating that same recipe, you get the same curry goat that you love.
Yeah.
So let's just keep it what it is. Don't mess around with the structure of what it is. Keep the recipe how it is, and then just start, you know, focusing on the effort and the love that goes into making it.
Yeah.
Right. And try and bring that to coaching, right? Don't change the recipe. The recipe works. Keep it as it is. Right. Yes. Flex with some of the other stuff. So you might. You know, you might cook it for 41 minutes rather than 42 minutes. See how it comes out. Keep the recipe the same, because that recipe works. Now, the challenge I've put on coaches is, what can you change within that? Within the context of what's working, what can you change? Where can you shift your focus? What can you further develop within it rather than changing the exterior, which is the recipe itself? And, you know, I guess you know, if I was to extend that question to yourself, in the fact that, you know, what does that typically look like for you in terms of practice design and session structures? Do you find yourself constantly changing? Do you find yourself adapting often, or is it similar to wireds when you probably got limited structures that you use now? Just maybe adapt the area sizes and the times that you spend on them, and really kind of incorporate into the whole step principle kind of stuff, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I agree with what you're saying. I've been very guilty of it in my past. I'll say openly, I think one of the things that I've been guilty of in the past is quickly after one session going to a complete new session. And what's wrong with just repeating that session? Because that learning is probably just going to, if it's still going to continue, because there's going to be within one session, not everyone's going to have picked that up. Or you can consolidate it. It's the learning journey is still continuing, and the development of it is still continuing. So I've been very guilty of that in my past, in terms of going, okay, I need to keep it exciting, the lads are going to get bored and stuff like that. But the art of it then is, so going back to your question there around session design and stuff like that, and changing templates, well, the art of it is, well, I'm going to keep the session, but I might tweak the constraint in a different way to get a different, slight different outcome. So now they're going, oh yeah, we know this, remember this from last week, you know, okay, well, I'm gonna, then they all start doing it, but actually the constraint's different, so the problem solving becomes completely different. So they're already learning, and it's the same practice. So I think that's where I try my hardest to go with it. Yeah, of course I've changed my sessions, of course I will, but because the topics will change, but you can still get the same outcomes from, I don't know, crossing the finish session to a 1v1 defending, where you're working on 1v1 defending from a wide area, stopping the cross, but you're still getting the crosses in.
I think you're spot on. I often talk about it as, you know, if you imagine that this is a show on the stage, you just got to shift where the spotlight's going, rather than have to just shift the stage, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
I think that is sometimes the challenge for coaches, and one of the simplest things. So, well, look, if you've got an in possession practice, it's very likely that's possibly the same practice that you can use out of possession too, on that area of the pitch, on that particular moment of the game, if you like. And I think that part is almost sometimes the coach is looking at me like, hey, you're right.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to come up with something new. Just use what you've got and just shift the spotlight on the stage, essentially. And I think it's a great way to look at it, in terms of actually you spend less time then designing the practices and more time actually doing the coaching of the content itself. And I think that's the key part. So I guess, you know, just linked to that, then, again, it's a conversation I have with a lot of people, Ryan. From your perception, in your perspective, what is the role of the coach?
Yeah, I think it's just there to, ideally, it's there to support the individual within the session, to guide where they need to guide them, and I suppose to motivate. So there is that motivation that the boys will need as well, whether that's encouragement and praise, because I think that's underrated, praise and encouragement, because everyone likes it. Everybody does. So they're gonna want to try to do that action even more when they get a praise, either for the intended action. It might not come up. But actually, oh, that was really good. But what else could you do? That sort of scenario. And they're going to want to try and do it even more. And then obviously, if they're still not getting it, well, that's where the coaching comes in. So that trial and error is not working. Okay, well, let's try and fix it together now. I think that observation of what's going on within the session. Is the learning taking place? Okay, if the learning isn't taking place, that might be my time to step in and help and guide. Do they need support? Yeah, they need support, need a bit of encouragement to let them know that they might be doing this really, really right, just might need a little tweak. So I think those are the big factors for me.
I think there's two very powerful things in what you said there, Anthony. The first one is around the collaboration, you know, let's fix it together. It's not a case of, you know, I'm the coach, so I have all the answers for you. I might have an idea, you know, I've got some ideas, I've got some thoughts, but ultimately I want you to come up with a solution that works for you and that feels right for you. And I guess the other bit is obviously recognizing that, you know, that praise piece. And I talk about it, right? You know, what gets rewarded gets repeated.
Mm-hmm.
Players don't care what you praise them for, but whatever you praise them for, that's where the attention is going to go. So if it is on the outcome, be specific. What was it about the outcome that was worth praise? You know, if it is on the effort, if it is on the process of the decision making, like they've made a good decision, you know, what was it there? And you know, can you reinforce and praise those bits rather than just being generic? And I think this is going to challenge the coaching comes sometimes where you know, we can be guilty of it in many cases, right? Where we just comment, oh, well done, unlucky, you know, good work, whatever. But whenever actually, say never, we're not, in my opinion, often specific enough what deliberate. That premise is there for, and being deliberate and intentional, like you said, and being deliberate about, right, I love the way that you turned your body there, you know, because it allowed you to do X.
Mm-hmm.
Keep, you know, let's see if we can do some more of that. Bang. Now, you might not have been able to pull X off.
Yeah.
But actually, turning your body in that moment allowed you to do that. But then being very specific, because I think one of the things that gets often missed with coaches is that we see things, we don't say it to the players, and when we try and revisit with them, they've got no idea what we're talking about because the moment's gone.
Yeah.
The moment's gone. So I think we need to catch them.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. Sally from Finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
When they're doing it right, be specific and deliberate with our intentional praise. And then also just that other little layer, you know, I talk about a lot in the work that I do around, let's use praise to stretch. The praise to stretch meaning, right, Danny, I love the way that you've done that. Just have a think about this now.
Yeah.
So lead with the praise and give them a set of challenge. The praise and challenge. Now you're going to try and do the praise, but now you're going to try and lead them towards the next step. And it's just, you know, that process of let's just constantly extend your step, right? And I asked you a question about the role of the coach, and one of the things I often say that I think the role of the coach is to get the players to do things they haven't yet considered.
It's good.
And if you can do that, then you're constantly putting them in a mind frame, in my opinion, of problem solving and solution identifying. So I think, you know, that's a great place to be in. But then the reason I asked the question in particular is I think there is a, especially with newer coaches, that challenge of they think commentary is just enough. They think putting on a practice is just enough, but actually there's no, in my opinion, coaching taking place.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. And I'll go back to my very first time when I started. I was very much about that, very much commentary based in terms of my vocals. And it's a hard trap to fall. Sorry, it's an easy trap to fall into. It's hard to get out of as well. So that's where I think you need, if you've got someone that's next to you that you can rely on, and you before your session, so you want to develop yourself. So we can still develop ourselves even though we're putting a session on. So you can go to your buddy coach. Listen, just watch out for me in relation to my commentary. If I'm starting to commentate on the session rather than actual coaching. And then give them some deliberate words that you're looking for that you don't want to keep repeating or going after. That coach can also observe you and you're getting some feedback there, and you might just come and check, just watch you, giving it a little bit of commentary, just try and notice. And then straight away, because it's easy to get, I think we all do it, good session, you get wrapped up into it and and the boys or the girls, they're flying and the session's going, the ball's rolling really nice, and you can get really absorbed into it and you can potentially lose your focus because of how invested you are in the actual session, all the planning, all the time you've spent before it, all the prep as you get there, setting up, and then everything's arrived and it's going to plan, but you can still get absorbed into it and you can miss the detail that you're potentially going after, your objectives, what you're going after, that sort of stuff. So I think having someone there to potentially know your objectives that you're going after, observing you, what you want to get out of it, and then probably checking and challenging you in those right moments, not within in front of the whole group and stuff like that. It might be just a little bit of a drive-by. Just remember what you meant, what you wanted me to go after. You've just said it a few times. Just be aware of it. I think that's key.
Body coach is massive. Yeah, no, 100%. I think, you know, just linked to it, I think it's a question I've been asking a lot of coaches and I've been having a lot of conversations about recently, that around coach developers and I guess coaches having a better understanding, a more deliberate understanding of maybe how to use a coach developer and what they want to get from a coach developer. So, you know, maybe just share your experience, you know, when you've interacted with coach developers, you know, what does that process often look like for you? Because I think there is it's a fine balance between coach developer pulling things out from you and you actually wanting to get specifics out of the coach developer, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, you've got to reflect on what you want to be like as a coach. What are your strengths? And not being afraid to, you know, write down on a piece of paper what you feel you're good at and then what you actually feel you need an area of development in. And then, so when your coach developer comes in, and yes, he will observe you and your session and how you come across and give you feedback, but there might be stuff within the stuff that you've written down that potentially the developer hasn't spotted, or he's spotted and actually thinks you're pretty good at it. So you can then, how can I even get better at it? So I think it's just having some clarity, making sure you get clarity in terms of what you want to be like as a coach. What are the sort of things, what sort of your values and beliefs that you want to be like? And then what sort of things you feel you need to develop in? And then being open enough to be able to express that to you or whoever it might be, a buddy coach, a coach developer, head of coaching. Go, can you watch out for these things and help me? But then not just help me, okay, well, how? So now it's the after bit, it's the review bit, or how can we do it? Okay, what sort of tips could I use? If you haven't got anyone available to watch you, have you got the facility to stick a camera up? I've done it many a times. I've been really conscious of my vocals and commentary, funny enough. So I've just stuck my phone on record. The whole session, just recorded it all. And I've just listened to it back. I've done that so many times. It's really simple. It's just hit record on your button and just go and listen it back. And then you can hear how you're communicating with the group, with the individual. Are you commentating? How long your interventions are? Are they too long or are they too short or whatever it is? Is your explanations clear enough? And it's just a simple tool to use. So I do tend to use that quite a lot. Especially if I'm trying something new as well. I think if I'm trying something new, then I will try and hit record. And
I think it's important, isn't it, to have that objective piece that you can look back on and you can really, I guess, get a full picture of it. And often saying that, you know, use the analogy that you made, if you're in the frame and you can't see the painting, sometimes you need an external perspective, whether that's an audio recording, whether that's a video recording or whatever that is, just to kind of get a bit more of a fuller picture of what's actually happening. And not just that, but if you've got video in particular, you can then see the reaction of the people that you're speaking to and engaging with, which I think is really important. So I guess, you know, linked to that, you know, but I'm conscious of time as well. What would you say for yourself then is your biggest coaching challenge at the moment then?
In terms of me as a coach, or in terms of just a challenge, like external challenge, or
because, you know, I guess the reason why I asked the question is because, you know, the coaches of all different levels listening to this, and I think it's really important for them to understand, especially the newer ones in particular, or the ones that are earlier on in their journeys, or ones that are maybe thinking about embarking onto a journey into academy football in particular, that we're all facing our own coaching challenges. None of us have cracked it. And the moment we think we've cracked it, we've probably been left behind. And I think also sometimes the challenge that we're facing now is something that we used to have the solution to 10 years ago, but we've almost forgotten what we knew, if that makes sense. And I think it's important just to kind of really shape that perception and that picture for coaches to think about, actually, do you know what? It doesn't matter whatever you're working on, you have got your own challenges.
Yeah. I think for me, it's the continual development and learning. For me, obviously, I've gone on a bit of a journey. I'm in non-league football as well, at a half decent level. So it's finding those little extra bits, trying to bounce off the right sort of people to get the extra bits for the individuals that I'm working with. For me, I like to be challenged. I like to be uncomfortable. So it's just probably trying to find those uncomfortable moments, but where people will allow me to be uncomfortable and learn and develop as well. That's really key, because you can get comfortable and sit there and go, okay, well, this is I'm pretty good at this. This is all right. I'm sound in this age group, or I'm good with this individual that I'm working with. But what about the next individual that has a complete different values and beliefs and traits and stuff like that? How are you going to now be able to coach two different people that are different ways? And I think that's the next challenge for me, is just making sure that I stay on that journey and don't get in a place where I kind of accept to be comfortable. Just keep pushing and striving to be the best possible coach for the individuals that I'm working with.
But I guess, you know, just thinking back now, you know, you've been coaching for 13 years, you've had your playing experience prior to that. When you first got into coaching, you talk a lot about the idea that, you know, you got humbled, you came in with an idea of what coaching should or could have looked like at that time, very quickly put into a situation that might have shifted that, or at least challenged that thinking in the first instance. If you could go back now, 13 years ago, shall we say, knowing what you know now, what are some of the biggest messages that you'd like to maybe share with yourself if you had the opportunity to do so?
Patience. You need to have a lot more patience.
The one thing that you said you didn't have when you came to it.
Yeah, massively is patience. Is a bigger one. I'd probably say, although I was confident going into coaching, probably say, being more, because there was a moment where I could have got into coaches and I didn't go into it, and it was probably because I thought I didn't have enough patience, but it was probably because I didn't have the confidence to go and do it at that time. So just being confident in being able to be more open-minded and go and learn, and being open-minded to learning, I think would be a big one. What else would there be? Try and think to myself. Keep being a sponge. I think sponge is massive. For as much as you might not like a certain way, there's still going to be some value in it. So there was probably stubbornness was what a little bit in my trait when I was younger. So it's like, I don't like that. I'm just going to put that over there. I don't like the way they did that. Didn't like that session. But actually, no, look at it. There's going to be something in there that you can potentially use and adapt to fit you as an individual. So probably those things.
It's important, isn't it? You just have that open mindset of there's something we can learn from every experience. And I think, you know, the thing I say to coaches a lot, and just in general, even to my kids, that, you know, we can learn something from every moment that we're in. Sometimes they might confirm our thinking, sometimes they might challenge our thinking, but there's an opportunity to either confirm or clarify things further, right? But also just open our minds. And I think, you know, like I said, the moment we stop trying to learn, it's trying to grow in that respect, is a moment we probably get left behind in the process. I think it is an evolutionary process. And I mean, I'll come back to what you said earlier about being able to fix things together. You know, what can we learn from one another, and what can we share? You know, there's going to be some things that, like I said, that you've probably forgotten. I'm sure you've had conversations, or you've been involved in courses or interactions where you think, oh, yeah, I used to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't done it for ages because maybe the environment you're working in doesn't necessarily require that interaction or that type of action to take place. But then, you know, you might find yourselves in a situation next year where actually that becomes relevant again. So I think it's understanding and having the presence to kind of sift insights and knowledge out, right? Where actually this is not for me, this is for me, but maybe not for now, and this is for me, and I can apply this straight away. And I think having the, you know, that intentional aspect of, right, almost, you know, knowledge sorting, if you like.
Yeah, definitely. I call you talk about analogy and stuff, toolboxes. So what tool do I need? What tool do I need for this situation? And not every tool fix everything, does it? So I'm trying to making sure that you're adding each tool.
Yeah.
For any situation that arises, any role that arises, any session or whatever it might be, interaction with a parent or a player or anything like that, trying to add all those little tools so you can, whenever it's needed, you've got it and you can just pick it out and just use it. Not being afraid to add it, I suppose. Yeah,
definitely. I think it's just understanding what the use of that tool might be. Also recognizing, like you said, you know, every tool works for something different. But some tools can be utilized in other ways to get the same problem solved. There's a beauty in that as well. Danny's been a real pleasure, man. Just diving into some of your insights and just your experiences, and hopefully it's been a reflective conversation for you as well.
Definitely.
Any final thoughts that you'd like to share with the coaches that listen to this?
I suppose it's tough out there sometimes, and you find it hard, don't we? We all find it hard, but just try and remember how you felt at the very start of the season. To, you know, I know it's come to the end of the season for me now, and you get a bit tired and stuff like that, don't you? But I suppose just remember how it feels when you put your boots back on for that first pre-season session. You're really excited to get out there again and just keep working hard and keep enjoying it, I suppose. Thanks for listening.
I think it's important, right? You've got to be able to enjoy what you're doing. I think we all do it because we have a passion for the game in the first instance, and I think often for many of us, I probably don't get articulated in this way, but we do it because we want to help people as well.
Yeah.
Football just happens to be the vehicle that we're using to do it.
Yeah, definitely. Passionate, aren't we, about it? So otherwise we wouldn't be doing it for as long as what we do.
100%. Danny, thank you again for your time. I really appreciate it, man.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your time.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent and personal development together to just one platform. You can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care. there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.